If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're going to keep talking about this because it just keeps getting worse. This isn't about left or right. It's about power and psychology. There's that letter, Jamie Raskin's letter to Attorney General Pam Bondi that come out. It doesn't read like politics. It reads like history repeating itself. A federal sex trafficking investigation into Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirators, transferred, silenced, and declared dead with a memo. 50 women, 20 named perpetrators, $1.5 billion in flagged transactions by the banks going, you might want to look into this. This looks a little sus. And suddenly it all just ends. That's the process that the Epstein investigation has gone down, and it all ended this summer. To help us understand how something like this all takes place, how power, fear, and self-preservation can twist the mission of justice itself, we're joined by someone who knows the world from the inside, Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Because if this was just a bureaucratic blunder, it wouldn't feel this coordinated. So today we're going to go beneath the headlines into the psychology of cover-ups, the culture of silence, and the behavioral patterns of people who choose power over principle. Robin, welcome as always. It seems this is our topic as of the last many weeks every time we talk, but there's so much to dig into here. When you hear that an active federal sex trafficking investigation started in New York, then the DOJ said, we're going to take it up for you. We're going to keep this going. And then suddenly, nothing. Shut it down after being transferred to D.C. What's your first instinct as someone who's worked inside the bureau? What's going on?
And it's a great first question to ask. Like, what's my first impression? What did I first do when even prepping for today? And in all these situations, because I intimately know the government bureaucracy, I intimately know the bureau and how we do things. And it is filled with very righteous people in the sense of I always every day went to work to do the righteous thing for the country. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always about protecting American citizens, national security of the United States, our allies and our friends and family. Everyone around me at my level was of the same ilk and the same motivations and came in for the same reasons. And so my first impression always is, all right, what would compel someone to do this? What would be the real rationale, the bureaucracy and everything behind this? And so the first thing I did on hearing all this again was, all right, so let me do a deep dive. You know, I did a deep dive on the research. Mm-hmm. Let me look at all the cases we actually do. What's actually the priorities? What are the goals? What are the stats we actually track? What funds the government? What funds the FBI from different investigations? So I can get an understanding is what would compel someone at any level to not focus on the Epstein stuff? And what else are they doing if they're not focusing on that? So that's the first thing it is. I do a deep dive to understand what's going on behind the scenes to get that deep empathy and context from a granular level, from an actual operators and lower level executives piece of pie. And so that was pretty revealing when I did that, but it doesn't excuse or help you understand. Cause I really wish I could unravel this entire thing to say exactly what's going on, because there's every time I come up with, here's what would make these things happen in my world when I was an investigator, it falls apart when you look at it at the bigger picture, because like this last letter that sent to Bondi is like, all right, that's another what? Questions like, why aren't we doing more? And because at the granular level, down at the case agent level, there's a lot of reasons why it wouldn't have been followed earlier by a case agent to investigation. Mm-hmm. That is, when you have, I'll give you an example. So from my career, especially when I was working at FBI headquarters, or even as a case agent, you have a stack of cases of righteous work to do, more than you can ever do in a day or year or career. I mean, when I closed my career out, the first thing you start doing is transferring cases that are old cases that you never had time to work on because of priorities, and reprioritizing that stack every single day. As FBI headquarters, we had, as my assistant director in charge of us would always say, you have three stacks, and you reshuffle these three stacks every day. The stack of stuff you actually have to get done. The stack of stuff you have to get done or you get fired if not. The stack of stuff you got to get done or you're going to jail if not. Which stack do you choose? You got to go for the immediate stack. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and every day, what happens is someone on high comes down and says, reshuffle that stack because of this priority, because of this thing, because the Secretary of State says this, because Attorney General says this, because we have a new stat or measure we have to track in order to get funding, because Congress wants to see us do this. In order for Congress to see us do this, to get our money, we have to do this. And each one of those cases on my stack are very, very important righteous cases, but I still have to shuffle them because there's only one me and all this. That happens in organizations, that happens in businesses, that happens in government, that happens in the FBI. And so with that long explanation, I looked at the types of cases, these task forces, because the Epstein case was handled most likely off of a task force in both Florida as well as New York. And those task forces have mandates on prioritizing the immense volume that comes in. I mean, I have all the stats and all the numbers. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of cases and leads that come in on trafficking, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to minors and pedophilia and all the horrendous things that go around it. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of leads a year, hundreds of cases a year being prosecuted. Each one of these cases requires immense amount of resources, manpower, surveillance, FISAs, subpoenas, searches, interviews, all these things require bandwidth. Now, here's where I think they're able to try to hide. And I'll say hide because I do think when we see letters from Congress, like the congressman that put this forward, who was it? Raskin put forward.
Yeah, Jimmy Raskin.
There should be some transparency. When you're seeking transparency from Congress, you should be able to have transparency. But here's where I'm guessing from my background and understanding of what they're able to rationalize away on the Epstein stuff is, because when I did the research, the cases they tend to probably most likely, because this wasn't a violation I worked, so I'm looking hindsight, but I know the Bureau because I was Bureau for 22 mm-hmm. years. They're prioritizing the cases where there's a very direct threat of violence against children and those being trafficked. So they're going to prioritize those that there's violence, like imminent violence. Then they're also part of that prioritization. There's going to be drug trafficking. There's going to be RICO charges. There's going to be organized crime charges. And so there's a lot of racketeering kind of stuff going on at the lower levels. And the threat against the children themselves is what they're going to higher prioritize. And it's not, I mean, is that not righteous work too?
Yeah.
And so see that, and herein lies the rub. So, you know, when you have a case agent or a supervisor or the field office, they have this stack in front of them. Now, say they're looking at the Epstein case, and the Epstein case has very righteous work in here for all the horrendous things that are going on. And then all of a sudden you have the Attorney General office, you know, the assistant U.S. attorney, because they're actually ones over in DOJ prosecuting these cases, saying, hey, I know this is an important case. I know the Epstein case is important, but what do you got right now that's really hot? Because we need these numbers right now to justify our funding. What children are being threatened with violence right now? And then you can easily pick up this, this, and this. And now you get distracted with this. And it's not that they can't say they're not doing righteous work. It just got sidelined over here. So that's one way in which I believe they're able to hide the fact that this. And so And now when it comes to the conspiracy, again, I'm not a big conspiracy guy, because if there was a group, a cabal of people that got together and says, we shouldn't do this, and they're wringing their hands, we got to hide and protect each other. With all the people that have been let go and fired between DOJ and FBI, you'd have a lot of loose lips, you know, sinking the ship of what's been going on. But you're not seeing that yet. But people are saying it's there, it must be there, it has to be there. Here's the types of conversations and ways in which I've seen or could potentially see this happening. It's kind of like what we just said. You have someone at the super high level that's an appointee. Because remember, people that are hired inside organizations like the FBI, we're not appointed. We apply, we work hard, we wanted to serve our country and serve the American people for a very long time. It took me, I didn't get into the FBI until I was 29 years old. And it was a year-long process after coming out of the Marine Corps. So we're talking service, 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 service. Everyone around me, same thing. Mm-hmm. And so these are the people that care very deeply about doing the righteous work. Now, when you start high as up, whether it's the Attorney General, Director of the FBI, all these high-level people, they're the ones that are potentially going to be much more aware of taking down government institutions, people that make a lot of money, political appointees, academic institutions, you know, Epstein's network, that's the area up there. Mm-hmm. And so here's the conjecture that could happen without actually having conversations that can be incriminating. And that is, it's not that they're saying, hey, we got to hide this, we got to protect this person, we got to not look here. It's easy because of the way I just laid out the priorities of protecting children, violence against them. They can easily say, hey, we really need to focus on this. And it's right work. And what happens is, in any organization, especially the Bureau or a government organization, when the boss that is in charge of your reputation, in charge of your promotion, in charge of your feeling of safety, of your paycheck, says this is the priority, and it's a righteous priority. It's not that they're saying don't investigate this. It's not saying ignore this. They're saying this is important today. We'll get to that later, but this is what the hot topic is today. And it shifts and it trickles down.
It feels like it's okay, look over here. Don't look here. Look over here. Because this is worth your time, too. This is something really big. This is important. This is righteous work. Look over here. And we'll get to this later. And I don't question the case agents and everybody that's working on it. They're doing their job. They're doing what they're told. And they have to follow what those orders are as to what they're going to be paying attention to.
Yeah.
But it's the bosses. It's that boss that has basically the large barrels of information. Like the Epstein case and all this that was basically handed to them by New York saying, here you go. Here's everything we got. Okay, we're going to take it on now over here at DOJ. Great. But we got to open the spigot here first and let that information then flow down to our agents so they can start breaking it down as we slowly empty this barrel of Epstein hell. But the boss is saying, no, we're not even going to open that spigot. Thanks for the barrel of shit, but we're just not going to open the spigot, and nobody down here is going to work on this. We got other stuff. This is another barrel of stuff. Work on this barrel, this one. But this one's already queued up. We already know there's a lot of stuff in here. There's a lot of information in here that needs to be processed. Well, this is better. That's the problem. That's the problem that's going on here, because it is, and especially when you have people who've literally campaigned on this stuff, we know there's a lot of people involved in this shit show.
Yeah.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, it doesn't take a bunch of people in a conspiracy type situation to stop this. It takes one person to say, no, we're not going to prioritize that right now. It's important. And we're not saying it's not important. We're just not going to do it. It's on my shelf. See? What's important to us? It's on my shelf. Yes, that's great. Do you ever use it? Do you ever take it off, dust it off, look at it, try to, you know, figure out what the hell's going on there? No, but it's on the shelf. It's important. We're working on this. That's the problem.
I think
and it's all too convenient of an excuse to say this is righteous over here too. It's cloaking corruption with another righteous task, basically.
Yeah. I think you're right on. You know, I think the fear factor is so immense that it's paralyzing. I really think that's, I have no other explanation for it because it's the only thing is I see how they can do what they're doing if there's wrongness there. Again, conjecture, I don't know because I wasn't part of anything like this, but I've been really close to, I mean, I've been part of my own investigations where I wanted to do an operation that I thought was extremely righteous, extremely righteous, like recruiting people from foreign nations that could have really done a lot of good for our country. But someone over in the State Department decided a high appointee in the State Department had their own little special gig going with that country and didn't want to offend anyone at the wrong time. So I'm told not to do anything.
Yeah.
So go focus on this righteous work instead. So I'm like, you got to be shitting me. All right. You know,
and you don't have much of a choice in that matter.
No,
it's like, okay, no. I got to go do this.
Yeah. It doesn't excuse the fact that they're creating, you know, because what Epstein basically was doing, he was a beta tester for a monster factory. Mm-hmm. Because this is really what it was. I mean, he created, because all these people that are saying it's, you know, we have all these other things, we're going to focus on the violence against children and the organized crime aspects. And oh my God, the millions and millions of dollars that JP Morgan Chase was channeling all the accounts that were being opened up by Epstein for underage children. Isn't that billion. A freaking thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're 1.5 billion is what they're estimating.
That's profound. But if you're saying I'm going to take care of this over here, well, the real thing is you could undermine the entire process if you just took down the first monster factory. I mean, literally, this was a beta test of high-level people about how to run a service of underage children to all these high-level people that are being funded by these you just got to take down the beta tester.
Question for you. Does what's happened over in England, does that have any factor that they've stripped Prince Andrew of his title? Does that put any pressure on the FBI to start doing something about this? Because that other country said, no, we're going to take care of this. We are digging into it. Does their pressure, what they're doing, put pressure on our system?
You would think it would. But as we've seen in politics recently, if people don't give a flip about what someone else is doing, it's not going to put pressure on it at all. I mean, the public opinion doesn't be swaying, you know, people much these days. Anyway, I mean, look at a government shutdown. The entire public, I don't care what side you're on, says this is the stupidest thing we've ever seen in the world. And yet it doesn't seem to get anyone to move. I think it raised the bar of, hey, we got to take a deeper look at this and do something. But again, that's why the Raskin letter should have done something with Bondi, right. But we're still not seeing anything, which is why not? You know, it's like, just again, we said this on the last show, here's all you got to do. Just have one of the case agents on one of these investigations that was part of the task force, have them brief what's going on,
what
they found out, you know, just have some level of transparency, especially for someone who's committed suicide, supposedly in jail already, even though it's against all the laws of statistics. In cases like this, show that. I mean, but again, just lack of transparency allows us to fill in the gaps of what we think it could be, and then just spools out of control. So, what else?
Well, like you were saying earlier, it probably comes down to fear in a lot of this, what we're seeing out there. Because, I mean, if you look at this and you go, okay, well, these people that are in these positions of power, Kash Patel, Pam Bondi, they were placed there by certain people. And if you put morally weak people into positions of power, narcissistic people into positions of power, narcissism will always win. It doesn't mean the narcissist will, it means narcissism will always win, meaning it's going to be self-protecting because you put people like this into certain positions, they are going to want to protect their position and their clout and this new world that they have of all of this power. And that's going to trump anything else. That's going to trump pushing for what's morally right, even pushing for what some of these people before they were in these positions said, I'm a truth seeker. My goal is to expose this shit. Kash Patel even said, I want to expose this shit. This is going to go down. And then when you see him now talking about this, It's as if that version of him never existed, and we're all just supposed to pretend that he never said those things. That we should just accept, well, it looks like Epstein was just doing this for himself, nothing else happened, and that's where the evidence leads, case closed. And you can't help but think, what the hell's going on here? This doesn't seem like the same human being. This doesn't seem like the same path that he was on. And why is he saying such insane things that do not match with reality, do not match with the facts of the case as we know them, do not match with the supposed moral compass that he had prior and this passion for exposing this shit? And it's talked about like, well, I don't like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches anymore, in the same, you know, sort of tone in depth when we're talking about the Epstein case and what's there and what's not there. It's really stunning to watch, but the only thing I can think of at the end of the day is fear. Is, you know, yes, he is in power, but he's, if you decide I'm going to keep going down this moral crusade of trying to explore the Epstein files, and the person above him is saying, no, you're not, you have a choice. You can either keep going down that moral crusade, you'll probably get fired immediately, and you'll lose all your power and your title and everything else, or you can keep, you know, keep this going. You can keep getting the plane to go take your 26-year-old, go visit your 26-year-old as she's singing somewhere, which, by the way, she's an amazing singer, everybody. We should all sit down and listen and, you know, turn the lights off, light some candles. But you'd lose all of that, and that comes down to putting a morally weak person in a place of power where they're going to do the bidding for you the way you want them to, because this is how they operate.
And I think, you know, when I first came in the FBI, I think it's like 96, 97 when I came out of the Marine Corps. First director I worked for was Louis Free. Mm-hmm. After Louis Free, it was Mueller right after 9/11. He took over. And then Mueller, it was, what's his face? Comey. Then, yeah. Then Ray, and then I wasn't there for Patel, mm-hmm. But there was a shift, and I'm, because I mean we're poking at Patel and Bongino and the staff now, but I can honestly tell you, I served under Republican and Democrat leaders, and mm-hmm. up until probably first couple years of Mueller's term, I didn't know politics inside the bureau at all. Towards the end of Mueller's, when Comey came in, all of a sudden it became a thing. And I will tell you, all those things you're saying about, and rightfully so, about the current leadership, I could say it about every single one of them, mm-hmm. on both sides. I can tell you the stuff that was shut down under Obama's administration, how we were hamstrung under him as well. Mm-hmm. Profound on the national security side. It was dumbfounding to me, because I didn't care, because you don't care about politics.
Because it's not.
No. And so what happened, and to your point on that, is when I started being able to, again, the behavioral side of me really started really flourishing, because when you start seeing the reasons why people make the decisions they are, because when you have government appointees in charge of organizations, it will be political. There will be fear involved in decision making, because they're thinking about their next job. They're thinking mm-hmm. about their people's next job. Because when an appointee comes in, they come in with their tribe. You know, I remember, you know, and boy, the bureau was a very different place. And those former bureau people tell you the same thing.
Comey?
No, way before him. When I first came in, Louis Free.
Yeah.
Louis Free had been an agent. Louis Free had been an attorney and a judge. And Louis Free had, when he came in, he kicked everyone, very much like Patel wanted to do, but is a very different kind of person, because he had experience in street cred with agents in the agents in bureau. And he came in, mm-hmm. kicked everyone out of headquarters and said, we're going to go just fight crime and serve national security. People were experts in different fields. And it was, he went to, I have pictures of me at the FBI Academy in Quantico, running one of our final runs with Director Free. Director Free came and ran with every single academy class. I got my creds from Director Free. He was an agent's agent. He was all about being with the people, for the people, for the agents. And even when Comey first came in, he would call case agents across the bureau. I mean, I have a sticky note actually on, I did some pretty good work, and on one of the incentive awards I had gotten, there was actually a sticky note, handwritten sticky note on like one of these little notes right here on my incentive award said, nice job, hero, on Jay Comey. That, you know, so he used to do things like that, but then things went sideways. Then fear took over. Then politics started coming in and getting infused. And so it became a very, very different place. And that's when I started seeing, like we're talking about today, this fear factor, it's profound. The impact on it, on working cases is profound. And we see it at all levels. At the high levels, we're seeing it with these judges, the favoritism, the confirmation biases. It's just crazy. Oversight and outside objective opinions is what is truly really needed in these cases.
Well, we're talking about what's going on right now with call it a cover-up, call it a conspiracy, whatever you want to call it, the inaction basically of the Department of Justice as of right now, not diving in, not investigating, basically taking all of the information that we have recently learned in that letter from Congress to Pam Bondi, stating, you had 50 witnesses, you got an investigation into 20 co-conspirators, people who were working with Epstein, being basically, you know, the customers as well of Epstein, and these 50 witnesses, and them saying, nope, this there's not nothing here, nothing to see. They're all not credible. Never mind the fact it's what put Ghislaine Maxwell away. Never mind the fact it's what was the inspiration for stripping Prince Andrew of all of his titles of being in the royal family. So clearly, there's some legs to this information. Yeah. And the fact that the FBI and the DOJ is saying, we're not going to touch that right now for no explanation. Despite it being a massive promise to the public as a whole, to the people they serve, that we are going to dig into this, we are going to dive, and we are going to expose whoever needs to be exposed. Party be damned, we're going to do the right thing. And now when it's their turn to shine, when the spotlight is on them, they're like, oh, nothing to see here. Turns out that not it's all a big myth.
You know why? Know
damn well it's not. Why?
I think having read that exquisite book by the brave Guffrey, you know, Nobody's Girl. When you saw and get an understanding of Epstein's non-political corruption of everyone he touched.
Yeah.
I think when all these people came out with these they were assuming, they are hardcore thinking, most likely in their brains, it's got to be them. It's not our party, it's them. And then when they got into office, then when they're actually reading the files, then we're listening to the accounts of these, I think how many girls did they finally identify total? I mean, there's like 200, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They saw it's not just one party. It's not just one academic institution.
Yeah.
It is everyone at this time, everyone. It touches all of these narcissistic megalomaniac asses at this high level, so that if they expose one, this entire network that Epstein created, this monster factory, is going to undermine everything and everyone. That's why I think they're not exposing it, because everyone's going down with it.
And that's the reality of it too. It's not just that this is a big house of cards, and it's just only their trail of destruction with abusing these women. These people are placed in the house of cards of every piece of our lives, of every institution in our country. Yeah. And when you essentially put dynamite in all these different spots and then press the button and it all blows up, you destruct the building and everything with it. And then everyone's like, whoa, how do we fix all these holes around here? I mean, so many things will be affected by this if this information comes out and if these people are exposed, because they're key people in key places, in all sorts of key parts of life, in areas that no one is seeing coming, as being suddenly gone, and what sort of damage it will do. It's going to be catastrophic, but it needs to be done. Otherwise, it's just, well, let's keep Let's keep this pattern going. Let's keep them bringing in more folks who are going to think the same way and keep abusing people in the same patterns that have been going on before. But it feels that I feel like for so long, the fear has been, well, taking them all out, is it worth the damage that it will do to so many things? And I feel at this point, the American people are saying, yeah, we've been through enough shit. We've been traumatized enough by all this stuff. What's another societal trauma at this point, if it's going to at least take out a good chunk of these people that are still active? These aren't historical figures that are hiding away. They're still very active in every piece of our world today. And yeah, it's time to call them out. But again, you have those people in all these different places. That's precisely why there's this level of power where they're basically telling us the sky is not blue and expecting us to believe it.
And to the to Duncan's question about why haven't these girls actually named them, you know, in Jenna's book, even though Jenna came out in Nobody's Girl and named a lot of them, she said even in her death, she was afraid to expose some of these people because of the impact it could have on their families, on her legacy, on their livelihood, on their lives. The fear factor is immense. And, you know, as you're describing that, Tony, I was going back to, you know, other cases we've covered and the differences in them. So let's take a look at the Diddy case.
Yeah.
Diddy is very similar in a sense of we had trafficking, we had sexual abuse, some potentially minors in there. And yet Diddy was more like, you know, if you're thinking of I think of these things as and these people as cancers, right? Diddy was more like a prostate cancer. He's something that you could isolate, you could radiate it, and you could remove it. But this thing like Epstein, since it was so encompassing, it's more like lymphatic cancer.
It's everywhere.
There's no way to capture it all. I think it is so widespread because he knew how to protect himself. Yeah. He knew how to, and that's why he acted so brazenly. Ghislaine as well were so brazen what they're doing, acting with total impunity with everyone and everything because they captured everyone in every single circle, both sides, so no one could play one side against the other. He was the master of manipulating the entire world and corrupting them to his way of thinking. He normalized, I think he attempted to normalize this behavior with people that didn't even want it. You know, because when you listen to Jenna's book, you know, he was throwing these young girls at guys in their 80s that were even impotent in the rooms. And you can imagine that these guys were told, hey, I got a really good young girl up here. She's great at giving massages. And the guy's like, really? That's kind of odd. Okay, I'll get a massage. And the girls are then being instructed to go service them like you service me, like you service so-and-so. And these guys are like, what? And all of a sudden they're compromised. Because they had a little bit of inkling, that a little bit of creepy in them, and wham, he's got them.
Yeah. Stacey, what are we looking at in the comments for right now?
A lot of great stuff. Alicia says humans are complicated. As Robin said, they are motivated by many different factors. Candy says, name all the names. Name them. And that was something I was going to ask. Again, there seems to be this cloud of fear. Mm-hmm. People know the names. And nobody's talking. You talked about loose lips, that people who've left the Bureau, left the DOJ, they have to know these names, but people are not talking. There is something terrifying the living crap out of these people. What is it?
I think they just don't want to, first of all, they don't want to be associated with it because it'll destroy their personal brands. And if you even put your, I mean, think about it, if you even put your name in any way next to the Epstein name, you know, you're going to be blacklisted and rightfully so. And Jenna even talked about this in her book. And one of the challenges they had is that there's a lot of people associated with Epstein that traveled to his island, that went to the parties, kind of like the Diddy. I mean, think about it with the Diddy parties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You had the Diddy parties. And then you had the white party afterwards. Then you had when everyone was sent home. So here's the challenge with investigating this is that, all right, who was just associated with Epstein and who was really with Epstein? And so that becomes part of it. And so it's hard because there's not a lot of facts and data and details to differentiate the two between. And so if you're anywhere affiliated with the weather, you're just going to shut up silently. Whether it's true or not, remember for years that there was lots of strange, really horrific coincidences of people that ever had anything to say about the Clintons all of a sudden wound up committing suicide and being dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people have a lot of fear over what's going to happen to me if my name's even affiliated, if I'm even going to say anything, you know? So the fear, again, humans are complicated-ish, but we are all motivated by fear. But what fear looks like to each of us is what is different. And so that's why they're all living in fear. I guarantee it's fear.
And Gen Z says it's not about politics, but there are a lot of politicians involved. And I think that that comment, that struck me. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of people.
It's all over.
It is all over. But I think there's a lot of politicians, both sides, that are they put on the brakes right now. Like, oh, crap.
The thing that was really more striking, too, was the amount of academic institutions, like high-level presidents of universities, researchers, you know. And so, because what Epstein would do is he would fund research because he'd be, like, funding this research. He'd be funding this at Harvard University. He'd be funding this out in somewhere at a tech out in California. And so he would fund these research projects. He'd fund these individual researchers themselves and invite them to the island, then throw the great massages at them. And so he was able to get himself entrenched in all these different things and all these different people at the highest levels across the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So we have companies, corporations, academic institutions, and politicians, all at the high level. That's why this network is so intertwined. You're seeing that level of caste system, really, of them being all potentially taken down because he was interweaving everyone together. For what purpose was he doing it? Make himself safe, because no one's going to take me down, because if you take me down, you're all going down.
Wow.
How do you think some of these folks are handling this right now? Do you think there is intrinsic fear going on with some of these folks at this moment in time, seeing as close, you know, I don't even know how close we truly are to any of this information coming out. It feels like we're closer than we have been in the past. Maybe not. Do you think that there is a level of fear with them right now that, oh gosh, this could be exposed? Or are they sitting pretty tight right now, still going, yeah, nothing's going to take me down. It hasn't happened yet. Why would it happen now?
I think everyone feels good until they don't. Because I think people in desperate situations will align the universe and world around them to feel secure in the moment. And then they breathe a sigh of relief. All right, so we got Bondi to do this, or we got Patel to do this, or the FBI is doing this or not doing this. And so they're able to kind of maneuver themselves into, I'm good. Then all of a sudden you have one thing that happens, like, you know, the crown removes the prince status from someone, or a letter comes in from a congressman, and then they go into hyper mode again. So the thing to always watch, again, we don't have this optic because we're not, you know, at that level of behind the scenes, is when a new thing breaks, when a new letter comes in from Congress, when a new public outcry happens, who starts trembling? You know, what tremors in the force you see. So because again, what I do as a behaviorist is you look for deviations from patterns, from life arcs and norms. And anytime you see someone deviate from a behavior spike, something happened there to create a behavior spike. And so what I would be doing if I had the capability, because I don't see behind the scenes, you know, no magic eyes, but I'd be taking this big 50,000 foot optic. And so when a letter from Raskin comes in, something like that comes in, what I want to see is, who all of a sudden starts changing their behavior? Mm-hmm. Who starts scrambling a little bit? Because that's where you then want to pay attention. It's like, oh, someone's got a little bit of a stress attitude here, a stress reaction. So what's causing it? Could be a bad day, but it could have been this. And so I'm always kind of looking for deviations from baselines. That's the only really thing you could do.
And that's what I'm wondering about right now with what we saw with Prince Andrew in the UK in the last week or two, where they stripped him of you know, what's left, basically, of his titles and such. is that damage control? Is that preparing for what may be about to come? Is that, or is it just damage control from the book? And it's like, well, there's even more negative stuff coming out about Andrew. Or is it like, yeah, this is going to get really bad again really quick, and we'd like to already have been out in front of this going, we've already disowned him weeks ago or months ago or whatever it may be. So the royal family doesn't have this big, you know, smudge all over them. If and when these names start dropping and we learn even more about these web of soul rippers.
Yeah. I think, again, my conjecture on it is that when you have something like the book come out and it names him so explicitly in that book, he's got his lawsuits that he settled for, that was enough for them to say, hey, there's more here. And also because now it's become very evident that there's a lot of pension issues going on. It can tie up a lot more people, and it could get a lot. There's a lot more dirt there than's even in the book. Yeah. And I think that's why they took that action, because there's no denying it now. Mm-hmm. And that's why if I was everyone else, I'd be scrambling, you know, if you're involved in this. And that's why I think there's a lot of silence. And that's why every time you see a letter coming in and it hits like this void, it hits like a black hole. That's very telling. It's never just what people are doing that is telling. It's what they're not doing. Mm-hmm. And when you see a collective silence, that says a lot. As much as it is one person or two people screaming about something, that says something about them. But when you hear a collective silence and like a dull thud when something hits, you're like, ooh. Mm-hmm. That says a lot more about what everyone might know than what not. So
there's a lot that could very easily come out. I guess the other question I would have, and I'm interested in your perspective on, eventually they're going to have to seat the other congresswoman that will then give us the enough people to vote to have this information come out or have the Epstein files released. Who's to say what's going to be released is going to be of any sort of magnitude of information? I mean, what sort of powers does the DOJ have basically to redact pretty much everything and anything they want to?
And it just becomes
a document of words and names that are missing, and we're just left exactly where we are right now.
Yeah, that's probably what it will wind up being. I'd imagine, because they have all the sealed, Dufresne, she had a lot of sealed documents from the grand juries. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them haven't been unsealed yet. So I imagine there's other girls, all the other girls gave those statements as well. Those are going to be the real, what I'd be really interested in is the girl statements. Because those are going to be the ground truth. Those are going to be the granular. Those are going to be the gritty. And those are going to be the ones you really want to talk to. But they're also, those are the ones that are the most fearful as well.
Robin, what about the statute of limitations? Are we running out of time? This was asked by Jennifer Nicholson in our chat a while back.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to that.
Yeah. And it's a great question, again, because this isn't my violation. I worked, but when I was reading in the book, the statute of limitations is a big problem in this thing, because kind of a roundabout answer to that is the statute of limitations on these things is coming up. And what I found out by doing, and when we started covering this case, is the statute of limitations is such a small period of time. Meanwhile, women typically don't report these types of things until they hit their 40s because of that fear factor, because of working through the trauma, because they feel like it was their fault because of the way that the groomers made them feel. And so that's why the statute of limitations a lot of times runs out on these things before they make the claims. And then they can start claiming things like false memories. And it's just, she said she is willing, she's getting money for this. I mean, they're using all the standard tricks to victimize, re-victimize the girls on these things. So statute of limitations is definitely not on the victim side on this. This whole thing, the whole law system, the legal system needs to be revamped when it comes to this. Because I learned an awful lot, because we talk about on the show a lot the false memories that people will have over time. But when it comes to girls that have been abused like this, what happens to their memories is false memories and inaccurate memories can happen when it comes to timelines, when it happens to places and people, not people, places potentially, But when it comes to the individuals themselves, the most accurate is them. Because yeah. as Jenna said, when you have a 200 or 300 pound beast on top of you, inches from your face, you never forget that face.
Never.
So they're the ones that you really want to talk to on this. They're the only ones I would trust. Seriously, out of all this, I mean, I won't trust anything coming out of what the government says. I don't know how you make the girls, Nick. I don't know how you inspire the girls to feel safe to share the details of who they were with.
Because she's just Virginia is just one of them, you know. And there's so many more. But yeah, they have an interest in continuing their own lives. They have their own futures. They have their own families. They have their own world that they have, if they're still alive. You know, doesn't necessarily want to revolve around this horrible trauma of their past. But aside from them coming out and telling their stories, I don't know that anyone ever will. And I don't know that we're ever going to get to the bottom of it until all of this round of abusers that we're talking about here are dead and gone. And then they've essentially won because they got to live their life and get away with it. And it just becomes some sort of historical detail of these monstrous characters that once roamed the earth.
And that's why I call them polar bears.
I'm sorry, Robin. We're sending such a horrific message to survivors of assault. We're saying we don't care about your story. We're saying you're lying. You're making it up. And then there's this other narrative of you've got to tell your story. You have to speak up for yourself. So it's like just this thunderstorm just crashing against each other. And just none of it makes any sense.
It needs to be safe for them to tell their story.
Exactly. And
that's what we need is an environment where that
structure
exists.
Around you, you know, Jenna talked about, that's why this book is such an important book. She talked about it so perfectly and beautifully in the book. I get so misty when I think about her in that book. She talked about, she wanted to, and she became an advocate for victims like her, but it came at a cost because she's re-traumatized every time she told the story, and she's trying to be just a mother and a wife, and she's trying to be the best step. But every time she's re-traumatized by this, it affected her family. Then the other thing is, she was, as she said in her own words, she was unemployable because no one wanted to hire in her mind someone that was sex trafficked, and no one wanted to hire someone that was such a public figure, and so she had to settle for she had to take settlements. Because she had to provide for her family who was unemployable. Yeah. I mean, it's just when you she allowed you to walk a mile in her shoes to get that deep, active empathy to understand what goes on and what courage it takes, not just for her, but a team around her to stand with her to fight the monster machine that Epstein created and all these other monsters create because they know the system. So, I mean, think about it. So here's Epstein. He's got the most powerful lawyers in the world that know the legal system better than anyone else. They know the loopholes. They know the statute of limitations. And you combine that with their predatory grooming techniques. They know how to victimize so effectively that he operated with impunity. He's throwing little girls at anyone he wanted to without any fear because – And then Ghislain Maxwell was doing the same thing. All she had to do was recruit one girl, and she then had that girl recruit all the other girls. It's not me, it's all the other girls. And then when they give them money in exchange, well, it's just they're just money hungry. They're money grubbers. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's why I use that word soul ripper, because these are not humans. They don't even resonate with the same species in my mind.
Yeah. They know how to work this in such an intricate, monstrous way that it is truly shocking. It's like, how are you processing anything? And this is how it comes out. There's so many questions, and we'll keep covering it. We'll keep seeing what happens here. As of this recording on that letter that was sent to Bondi, they're demanding by the 10th that, you know, an answer is given. And, you know, as we've seen already from Bondi, super mature answers like your mother and things like that coming out.
Oh, that's a whole other thing.
Essentially, we're dealing with 5-year-olds running the government.
You know me, I'm the glass half full. I'm very positive about everything in the world. And here's the good news. good news is this. Good news is shows like ours. There's a lot of people covering this and a lot of people holding people accountable in ways they couldn't be held accountable before. Yeah. When Epstein started his monster factory, he had no idea that ever in the history of our species that these types of shows would be out there to force him to be compliant, to force the world to and allow these girls to feel safe to come forward. The more this happens, you know, the better, because all the girls that even the girls were afraid to talk to each other. You know, Jenna talked about that in the book. They're afraid to talk to each other. When they finally got together, she was holding a retreat from all to get together. COVID shut it down before it actually happened. But it was just, they were afraid to even talk to each other. That's the fear they had. They couldn't even bond for a long time until they actually finally could, because the shame that they're made to feel. And that's how these horrendous soul rippers do it. God, anyway, I digressed again.
It's okay.
Your thoughts in the comments section. Everybody put it there. We'd love to hear it. Robin's latest book, Unbreakable Alliances. Go check it out wherever books are sold. And yeah, press subscribe as well. I'm going to go bathe in Purell again. I feel like every time we get into this one. But it's an important one, and I'm glad we can have these conversations, and this continues to need to be exposed. And if you feel the same need, share this so other people can hear about it, because I think that's half of it. A lot of people, they don't realize the depth of what the hell has been going on. So please do that. Until next time, for Robin, for Todd, for Stacey, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.